Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, IBC Bank, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.
Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Tom Leppert.
Thank you.
Mr. Leppert, thank you, sir. Very good to see you. We were saying that we spent some time together a couple of years ago doing something just like this, and of course we know that in the last couple of years the world has changed.
It has.
It has even changed in the last year, in the last 6 months. I want to ask you about some political stuff first, since we are going into the election. As I mentioned, you endorse Governor Perry. The mayoralty of Dallas is typically nonpartisan, and I suspect that a lot of mayors around the state in a normal year would like to avoid getting into the political fray. Tell me about the decision to endorse Governor Perry. Why are you for him?
Well, both from the experience that I had on the private sector and now on the public sector, I think it's critical that we build strong economies.
Right.
Clearly, our tax base is tied to how vibrant, how strong and growing our economy is. Unfortunately, I don't think that's perceived in a lot of areas within the public sector, the importance of just building an economy that's driven by the private sector where you create jobs.
Yeah.
We've had a chance to work with Governor Perry. He clearly is committed to building a strong economic development picture for Texas. And I can tell you, when I go out and visit with people literally across the nation and now the world, people are looking at Texas today and looking at it positively because of the strong perspective that we have on the economy. Low taxes, attractive cost of living, attractive regulatory environment, that's what produces business. Those businesses produce a strong tax base. That's how we can grow.
So from your perspective as a big city mayor, the way that state government has been run with Governor Perry in the lead the last couple of years has been a good thing for Dallas.
It has been.
Yeah.
Clearly, if you look across the nation, and I don't know of any place over the last couple of years that's been immune to the challenges from an economic standpoint,
right.
People still look at Dallas, look at Texas, and see really a sense of bright hope, that star.
Right.
We see population more and more coming to our state. I think in the space of the next couple of months, we'll see a census that'll give us probably 4 congressional seats.
Right.
That population growth, I think, will be interesting to see because it will not only come from the Northeast and the Midwest, where it historically has, but now you're also gonna see it come from California.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the performance of the economy, and I think it's very easy to see. You know, the large cities of this nation would love to be in the position of both Dallas and Houston.
You know, we're going into a legislative session. It's almost impossible to get through a day without anybody talking about this, that is going to have a significantly big budget shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
It may be now they're saying as much as $25 billion. We'll wake up tomorrow, it'll be $40 billion. Who knows? We'll only know when we know.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of that shortfall is that some costs at the state level may be offloaded to cities like Dallas in the name of cutting the budget. Cost shifting, they call it. This is what happened in 03. Are you expecting any of that? How will the city of Dallas be impacted, do you expect, by the shortfall and by the work of the legislature going
well, in? Well, our legislative agenda, for the most part, is a very defensive one.
Defensive.
Defensive.
Yeah.
I think we're very realistic in understanding that, given the budget situation, given redistricting, given some of the sunset, that the idea of new initiatives is probably going to be pretty limited.
Right.
So ours will be defensive, again, trying to avoid those costs coming down. But really, more importantly than that, send a signal. Send a signal that it is important to live within your means. It is going to be important to cut costs. Again, like most families, nearly every business in Texas has had to do over the last couple of years, and to avoid raising taxes. That's what's given the strength to Texas over the last several years. We don't want to be in the position of where California was 20 years ago and saw where it is today.
But you've been open, Mr. Mayor, as I alluded to in my introduction, you've been open at various points in your time as mayor to the idea of revenue directed to a specific purpose. I mean, the hotel issue was one that is known to people outside of Dallas. I mean, what would you say to the idea of greater revenue if you could figure out a way to offset it? Would you consider any kind of taxes? Are you entirely against taxes?
Well, again, I would be against any tax increase, yes.
Yeah.
Here's where I think the situation comes down to. There's clearly a lot of discussion, not only on the state level, but on the national level.
Of course.
On the spending side of it and debt, and clearly issues. When you see our debt ceiling having increased 34% since the beginning of 2009, you add in numbers, I'll quote Richard Fisher, who heads up the Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas. He would say if you add the obligations that any company would have to add in their balance sheet, we're looking at a national debt somewhere in the $90 trillion, $50 to $100 trillion. That number translates to probably $500,000 to $750,000 per household.
Right.
Indeed, that spending has got to be dealt with, be it at the state level or be it at the federal level. But there's another critical component to that, a part of that that's not talked about, and that is growing the economy. We have to grow the economy. We've got to create jobs. We've got to see an economy that's much stronger, much more vital than what we've seen. Because unless we do that, the spending piece isn't going to do all of it. We've got to create opportunities, and not only opportunities for ourselves, but also looking forward to the next generation. That's why I believe what we've done in Dallas is significant. We have tried to move away from what you see so much on the spending side and the public side, is programs, short-term programs, that, to be truthful with you, if you're using business vernacular, you call them operating expenses. Mm-hmm. But don't have any benefit down the line. Once the fiscal year comes, you're either going to fund them again or you don't have a benefit. What I believe is important is where there is spending, to make sure that we're putting it into assets, things that create benefit, create returns, create opportunities well into the future.
Give me an example of something you've done.
Again, the hotel is an example of that. That is an example of a type of investment that, unfortunately, a private business can't get their arms around, because the benefit of that comes from cab drivers who get fares from people who are coming into town, restaurants, hotels. Hard to harness the revenues from that you would do in a normal investment. But it's an industry that's 10% of our economy. So as we look down the line and trying to make sure that we've got nearly $250 million worth of local taxes, and make sure that we continue to have the jobs but continue to have that strong tax base, you want to make those investments. Another key one is the Trinity. The Trinity, we're going through a large project to kind of redevelop a large area of the city that, to be truthful with you, people have walked away from.
Right.
One of the great things about that is the economic development opportunities for the private sector will probably be better than anything that we've seen in Dallas. And Dallas has seen an awful lot of good things in the last several years.
So you're willing to spend money on things that will ultimately have a return for
yes,
the city.
Yes, but I'm going to spend it within our means. Right. You're not going to go beyond it, and you're not going to raise taxes to accomplish
it. But again, it's a question of where you get that money from. If you're not prepared to raise taxes, there's not a whole lot of money for investment spending right now in any city or at the state level.
Well, let's take a real example in Dallas for a second. When I came in, public safety crime numbers were the number one priority. We had to invest, put significant resources into that. Mm-hmm. Today, the police force is 20% larger than it was when I came into office. Now, we have received the benefit of that. We've seen double-digit declines 2 of the 3 years. This year, we're running at about 9.1%. By the end of the year, we anticipate that we'll be double digits. We've seen ourselves fall down the rung of the cities of the highest crime rates.
Right.
And we've got it probably the best indications. I go to town meetings today, and where it used to be the first item on the agenda, you'll at least go 2/3 of the meeting before anybody will bring it up. Now, we put additional resources in that, but we also said, what happens on the other side? Well, we were involved in a lot of medical programs. Those were medical programs that, to be frank with you, that was not the core of what the city does. Counties do those. We got out of those. We looked at other things, like the zoo. The zoo, we felt, could be handled in a better way in private hands. That saved the taxpayers $5 million a year, produced a better zoo. So while we made investments and said there are priorities, and there have to be priorities, you understand, on the business side, we said public safety was, and we increased significantly in investment in that. We also said there's other things that, to be truthful with you, they're not the priority, and we have to reduce those, and that's how we made
and
that
so
balance.
It was really just cutting over here so that you could
absolutely. But again, that's nothing different than a family does.
Right.
A family looks at the income, and they're not able to raise revenues like taxes. So they have to live within their means, and they try to say, here's our priorities. Education. We want to make sure that we educate the kids, because that is the opportunity for that future generation. And they're willing to say, to make that education possible for children, there's things that we'll forego today. Unfortunately, governments don't do that often enough.
Well, let's talk about education, because this has been one of the big issues since you've been mayor. And again, given the size of the state budget and the opportunities to cut, the places where you can cut and the places where you can't, everyone's expecting that education is going to take a big hit this time. And that presumably some of that will roll downstream to a city like Dallas. What do you do? How do you ensure, for a program like education, where people say there's probably not enough money put into it today, how do you ensure going forward that it's not going to take a significant hit?
Well, I think when you look at education broadly, you've got to look at K through 12, and then you've got to look at higher learning, because there's different issues there. And I think you also have to be conscious of looking at how do you improve it, not just from a budget standpoint, how you improve it. And I have some strong feelings on that. Some of those feelings, to be truthful with you, I think we can get significant improvement without putting additional dollars in. So I think you have to ask those questions. How do you improve the governance? How do you set standards that people can shoot for? Mm-hmm. How do you put additional choices in the system, e.g. charter schools, those sorts of elements? And how do you truly try to empower teachers and principals in ways that are truly empowering, not just using the word?
Yeah.
You can do all of those things, and as we've seen across the nation, get significant improvement. That doesn't take additional dollars. Clearly, dollars are important. I'm not going to minimize that. I believe education is a priority. As you said, in Dallas, historically, City Hall and the public school system put their back to each other. The reality of it is, I can do everything right, but if the public school system in Dallas don't improve substantially, the reality of most of that's going to go for naught.
Right.
So what we've tried to do in Dallas is figure out how we can support public education, but also, back to your point, how can you do it in ways that are cost effective? And let me give you a couple of examples. One is, I go to neighborhoods throughout our community. I've probably been more places than about anybody. We've got areas, and not unlike any other major city, where we have lost a generation of parents. In some case, prison, in some case, drugs. But we've got kids who have no support mechanisms. So when we think of a lot of the kids of the parents or grandparents in this audience, they get read to every single day. Every single day at night, they get read to. Well, there's a lot of kids in our communities across the nation never get read to. So we did an early reading program. That early reading program was not designed to teach physics or rocket science. It was just to give kids an exposure to reading. Letters add up to words, words to sentences, and that sentence applies to a thought that is relevant to the picture on the page. Just very basic things. So when they walk into public school, they're going to have a better chance of succeeding. We did that with almost no cost to the taxpayer, because we leveraged it on investments that we'd already made, libraries and librarians. We started an intern program to take kids in high school and have them understand why you stay in school, what an education leads to. Because again, in a lot of areas of communities across the nation, we have kids that don't understand that there's jobs like you have that are fun, that are exciting, that are satisfying, that support a family.
Yep.
So what we've tried to do is get businesses to take young people on and give them exposure to the business. Baylor Healthcare is one. They take interns during the summer. AT&T has done the same thing. They've been great supporters. And it may be half a day, some week, they get to shadow the CEO. Maybe another week, it's going to be with the head of procurement or the head of nursing. But to give them a sense of, here's why you stay in school, so that they understand that. Again, no cost to the taxpayers. Then we've also put scholarship programs. We've done some work with the schools to make them attractive so that when people walk into them, they feel that the environment is better for learning and, right. and teaching. None of those had any tax dollars attached to them, because we were able to go out, in some cases, I said, leverage assets that we already had, and in some cases, draw on businesses and utilize business opportunities.
How much of an impact can the mayor or the mayor's office or City Hall actually have on the schools in Dallas? Really, the schools in Dallas operate kind of almost on their own. Really, what you can do is be an advocate for this stuff. You can be a champion. You can be out there exhorting that the schools do this, but in point of fact, there's not a whole lot that you personally can do to affect
them. You're absolutely right. They're separate systems.
Right.
What we've tried to do is say there's two things we can do. One, we can shine a light on education, convey how important education is. And we'll be doing some things, literally sending materials out to every household, that's what we plan to do, showing how schools rate, showing how local schools in their community do, so that there's full information out there so people can understand it. So one is shining the light. The second is the programs that I mentioned, which hopefully on the edge support kids, give them a better chance of succeeding once they get in public school.
Other than education, right now, what is on your mind as far as the problems of a big city like Dallas going, say, ahead 12 to 18 months?
Well, again, I think the challenge is building an economy that's strong. We look at the situation on a national level. You've got very anemic growth, you've got no creation of jobs, you've got all the spending issues that we talked about. I believe at the heart of it is we've got to have a strong and vibrant economy, be it at the local level, be it at the state, or be it at the federal level. And we need to have policies that encourage business. Now, I've got an advantage. Having spent nearly all of my life on the private side, I think I have an appreciation of how you create jobs, how you make investments, and how those investments
lead. How is that practical experience applying itself in the time that you're mayor?
A couple of ways. One, going out and soliciting business. We've had about 60 businesses over the course of the last 3 years that have moved to downtown Dallas, so we've seen vibrancy in downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
That's one piece of it. Two is understanding what we can do on the government side to create an environment where businesses can be successful. To have that environment so that we invite businesses to come in, we give them an environment where they can be successful and then create jobs.
Yeah. I mentioned water use, that you've been sort of a big advocate for what is considered in some circles to be a more moderate or even liberal view of water. Talk a little bit about your policy on energy from the city's perspective.
Well, again, sometimes it gets classified as liberal conservative. I don't think either one is accurate. I think what we've done on these issues that you alluded to in the introduction is take a very pragmatic approach. And probably the green building is the best example of that. Clearly, I have some reservations on both sides of kind of the debate on the global warming and all those sorts of things. But that doesn't say that we can't be pragmatic and do some practical things that are going to benefit. For instance, the green building, we framed it in a very different way. Usually when cities across the nation have dealt with green building, they've ended up with enormous conflicts and disputes between the public and the private sector. We didn't go at it that way. What we did is on the front end framed as a business issue. So when we went out to business, we said, if we can position ourselves as being a leader in what's happening in this field, that's going to help to attract businesses. And by the way, to you business, that means more customers and more clients. So when we started this process, we brought everybody in, so it wasn't one side fighting against another. And look at what we did. It was very pragmatic. One of the best assets we've got in the city of Dallas is a landfill. If we can extend the life on that, then that's got more value to us. So green building reduces the amount of waste. That's a key element. The second part of green building is reducing energy use. That's a cost factor. That makes it much more attractive in the city of Dallas. If we can reduce the cost for individual business, makes it more attractive. So again, a very pragmatic, a very practical way that, to be truthful with you, I would argue is pretty conservative. It's using those pragmatic ways to make sure that at the public side, we're doing things that are going to benefit an economy that's got to serve us long in the future.
And the business community is with you?
Absolutely.
That?
In fact, what was fun on that green building piece was, again, historically with all the conflicts and probably because of my inexperience, we were the first city of any size that had done comprehensive green building standards. Mm-hmm. We had so little discussion on it because we had the business community that's involved that I put it on the consent agenda. So when it got passed, nobody ever noticed it. So one of the best things the city of Dallas did. So we had to go back afterwards and kind of tell people all the good things that we had done. But we did it a very different way because we said we're going to frame it a different way. And then, by the way, you come in, businesses. We got the design community, contractors, kind of the whole industry got together and said, you tell us, let's pull the public side out of it. You tell us what are the appropriate standards. You tell us what's the right timetable for implementation. Tell us what kind of tools for education that you need that we can work with you. Right. So when we put it together, we had a community that was excited about it, that felt good about it, and they were going to take it out and do the publicity and the visibility, which, to be truthful with you, is a much better way.
Dallas has always had a race issue. It's always been a big issue for previous mayors, for previous councils. Would you talk about the state of race in Dallas right now? Because actually, the issue seems to be much less in the papers these days. And I'm wondering if it's just naturally gravitated away as more important things or more pressing things have come up, or if there's been actually work done at the ground level that we're not seeing in a place like Austin that has really gotten to the root of the problem.
I think your conclusion is right. Yeah. I think the issues are less than they have been. Yeah. And in part, again, because the way that we framed issues. Yeah. It seems to me, and I articulated this when I came into office, that everybody in our city has a reason to work together. We're not going to go forward as a city if one part of the city succeeds and one part doesn't. We need to work together and understand that we're all in it together. Then we have to frame it in the way of economic opportunities, because those are important, again, for all parts of the city. Mm-hmm. And again, if we can create those economic opportunities, everybody benefits from them. So I articulated those messages, again, priorities on public safety, the importance of economic development, bringing businesses in, creating jobs. And I think that resonated because in an election, again, for a white business person that had worked in the Reagan administration and gone to Harvard Business School, we had 40-50% of the African-American vote, 50% plus of the Hispanic vote, 60% of the total vote. I think those are messages that resonate. And we need to get back. We have to have messages that all of our nation, all of our communities can understand and come together on. Mm-hmm. Things like public safety, things like a strong economy. Everybody wants those. If we don't create jobs, if we're not creating opportunities, then everybody loses. So I think part of it is, on the public side, people do a poor job of framing issues. That's the way we framed it in the green building. That's the way we tried to frame our overall priorities. And again, I think that's some of the success that was indicated in your question.
As demographic change is coming to Texas, we know that we'll soon be a majority Hispanic state. The big cities are going to feel, I think, the effects of that more acutely than anybody else. How will the coming Hispanic majority and the notion of demographic change in a broader sense affect a city like Dallas?
Well, it'll continue to change. Now, our population today is about 40% Hispanic, so we've seen a significant rise.
Increase as well, right? People hear a lot more about the Hispanic growth in Houston, obviously San Antonio, but Dallas has had a pretty significant growth.
It's an important part of our community. But again, the Hispanic community, I think, wants the same things that we all do. They're very family-oriented. Clearly want opportunities not only for themselves, but especially for their children in the future. That translates into education, that translates into jobs. So again, we can frame these things as creating differences between various groups, and it's always easy to do that. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's much more important to frame them in ways that we can all be successful and as a community and a nation move forward. And you're right, I think you're gonna see significant changes.
And we expect significant consequences for public education, also public health. Is the healthcare system, are the hospitals in your city, for instance, able to accommodate the growth in population that's coming and the likelihood that you're going to have more and more people coming through there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the great investments.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Parkland, largest public hospital anywhere in the nation.
Indiana, for a while, it was the busiest pediatric ER in
continues
the country.
Continues to be.
Right.
That hospital, there's going to be a new Parkland hospital that they're going to go under construction very shortly on. Yeah. Baylor, I mentioned them, a new cancer center of $350 million. Southwestern, one of the finest educational medical facilities anywhere in the nation, is going to be building a new hospital. They continue to expand and expand in some areas that are generating economic opportunities in Dallas. So if you look at what's happening, I could add Methodist, I could add Presbyterian there, both of them making big investments. Sometimes we're not as well known for the medical services that we provide, in part because we're not contiguous like Houston. Houston has a great advantage because their facilities tend to be much more contiguous.
But given the nature, Mr. Mayor, of the population in Dallas, you have a higher percentage of uninsured people in Dallas than many places in the state of Texas. I want you to talk a little bit about that, because obviously there's a lot of controversy over federal health care reform. At the state level, there's been great opposition to it. But the fact is, in the absence of some kind of reform, with the level of uninsured that we have in our state and in a city like Dallas, that problem is not just going to go away.
The problem is not going to go away. Yeah. And I think that's one of the challenges of the rhetoric that you get.
So what do you do as mayor to deal with
that? Well, again, I'm not a fan of the health reform proposal because I'm not seeing it create jobs, and I don't think we're going to get the benefits that have been allocated out there. And I think it will be...
The benefits of more insured people in Texas than in your city is not enough.
Well, and I'll tell you, I think that there are significant downsides attached with that. I think
Talk
the way that that's structured, it is going to be a cost that continues to increase, and we've got to be practical on the economic side. Mm-hmm. We can identify all of these goals, but if we can't afford them, if we can't deal within our means, then we're not going to satisfy them. I think it's much more important to go at questions of how do we make our medical system much more cost effective and much more efficient. I don't see much in that. That's a real concern to me.
But as a mayor, there's nothing you can do to force the system to become more effective. You've just got to deal with the fact that so many people in your city are going through the hospitals. ERs are as crowded as they are.
And we're fortunate that those institutions are terrific institutions, and they reach out to the community. Baylor, I'll give you a great example. They have, in partnership with us, invested about $25 million into a clinic in the southern part of our city where diabetes is the biggest issue. If I had one chip to play in the healthcare area within urban areas, it would be diabetes. The numbers, unfortunately, are just growing out of control because of diet and because of exercise, things that we can get our arms around. So what we're doing is putting a clinic in the southern part of our city. Baylor is doing it. And what they're doing is not only addressing issues of treatment, but they're also addressing issues of prevention so that we get some of these trend lines down. We're heading to the point where one out of three kids will have diabetes in our lifetime. That's just not sustainable. Mm-hmm. We've got to address the prevention side of it. And we're trying to reach out where we can do that. And as you pointed, the city can do so many things There's a lot of things that it can't do.
But there's
do
a limit to how much the city
there's
can
absolutely
do.
A limit on
right.
what to do.
But again, just to come back to you, so you say you oppose the federal health care reform.
Yes.
So what at the city level can you do in the absence of that to try to deal with the problem?
Well, what we can do is reach out into the community. So the things like the clinic that I mentioned to you. Two, we're working with businesses so that we can address the cost issue. We're trying to identify certain areas. Diabetes is one. Coronary care is another one, where we've got everybody involved in an effort that hopefully is designed to produce better outcome measurement, provide better costing on those. And that takes healthcare providers' involvement. It takes the insurance providers. It takes all of them. So we've got them all at the table trying to work through on a local level, how do we reduce the cost in the system?
Do you share the view of your fellow Republicans at the statewide level that the federal government has been too intrusive in the lives of Texans?
Yes.
Okay, talk a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, healthcare is one area that you're not happy with policy coming out of Washington. Where else are you dissatisfied with the federal government?
Well, I'm very concerned about
cities have a relationship with the federal government that is different from the relationship states have with the federal government.
It is, and I think part of it is the ability to get things done. It goes back to that regulatory environment. It goes back to the competitive nature of a community or a state or of a nation. And I have very, very, very significant concerns that we're not nearly as competitive as we were 10 or 20 years ago. Because I think, to an extent, the government has positioned itself as the obstacle. I would like the government to be seen much more as an enabler so that we can have an economy that grows and produces opportunities. And I think, to be truthful with you, the pendulum swung much too far. We deal with it on doing large projects. We've got some large projects that we're trying to do, and I've lost a lot of teeth and a lot of scars in trying to get things done. We are trying to work with all of the agencies as hard and as fast as we can, because, for instance, something like the Trinity, where floodway control is absolutely critical. We've got $8 billion worth of tax base, several thousand lives. We want to make sure that that is as strong and as effective as it can be. But we also want to do it in a way where we actually are able to make improvements, not just continue to do analysis, but actually make the improvements, and then move on to other components of the project that allow us to create, again, the strong economy, recreational opportunities, transportation to deal with, all of those growth elements. And I think more and more we're seeing the difficulty of trying to accomplish, in part because I've got accountability. My accountability usually comes at the checkout stand at grocery stores on a daily basis.
If not at election time.
And clearly at election time.
Every couple of years.
Unfortunately,
right.
Some of these agencies have gotten so far away right. that there's no accountability.
But the relationship you have with the federal government is not only one of them creating obstacles, it's often one of them providing resources. Mayor Castro, your counterpart in San Antonio, was here a few months ago, and he talked about the federal education funding that would have come to his city as a consequence of the Race to the Top initiative that the governor decided and others in the state decided they didn't want to participate in. He said, of course I would have taken that money. There's strings attached to everything. There is a tension between, on the one hand, the obstacles the federal government presents to a mayor like yourself, but on the other hand, the resources that big cities need from the federal government to do the work that they do. How do you balance that? Would you have taken the Race to the Top money? Mayor Castro says he would have. Would you have taken that education funding?
If it was available, I'm sure the school district would have taken it because it would be a school district.
But as
type,
mayor,
type
would you have
question.
Advocated for taking that money, knowing the challenges you have in funding
again,
education?
It would have been what the strings were, because I think the concern is on all of this is you can, again, make a short-term decision. And that short-term decision can be good. But you learn in business that you're not around for the next 2 or 3 months.
Yep.
You've got to be around for the next 5 or 10 years. And I certainly don't want to leave my successors with obligations and burdens that, to be truthful with you, you can't live with. So I think the idea of saying, yes, there's money, but you've got to ask, what does that do in the long term? We've seen some issues with cities, and I've seen the larger cities, that receive money. And they received money and used it for operating deficits and gaps this year. Well, next year it's not going to be available. So all we've done is push the problem out.
Right.
You can't do that. You've got to address the problem. You've got to have solutions for today.
Let me, as we wrap up here and we open up to questions, let me ask you a couple of political questions.
Sure.
I alluded to the fact that after the election, you're going to appear in an event with Sarah Palin. You're also going to appear with Pastor Stephen Brodin, who is the Republican candidate against Eddie Bernice Johnson, who last week said that he believed that one option for people dissatisfied with the federal government is armed insurrection. Do you agree with that?
No.
But you're going to stand with Pastor Broden at this event after the election?
No, I won't stand with Pastor Broden. I'll be at an event, and those events, I'm at a lot of events. One of the great things about being mayor is I get to interact with an awful lot of people.
Right.
But I'm not supportive of that at all.
Have you been, I'm wondering about your view of the, I alluded to the earlier to the endorsement of Governor Perry and now your appearance at this event. You're a nonpartisan mayor of Dallas, but you are clearly a Republican. Do you believe that the mayor of Dallas should be involved in partisan events or endorsement of candidates or whatever else?
I think the mayor should be effective.
Yeah.
I can tell you, as you can hear from my conversation, I've got some strong views on how public sector entities ought to operate within themselves. Mm-hmm. I have some strong views on the fiscal side of it. You'd probably throw me in the conservative category, but again, I think that's driven a lot more by my 25 years in business than it is the 3 years on the public side.
And no one in the city of Dallas misunderstands where you're coming from politically.
Right, they understand it.
Yeah.
And clearly I want to see people in office that understand the importance of building economies, providing opportunities.
Right.
Clearly, and I'll tell you, the faith community is a very important my faith is a very important part, and I enjoy reaching out and being involved in that community.
Okay. There was some discussion, finally, that you might run for the United States Senate when Senator Hutchison decides, if she ever does decide to retire.
Yeah.
I think at this point we always cast that issue in the conditional tense. You were, in fact, mentioned as a possible candidate if there were special elections this time. Have you given thought to that? I mean, the assumption is that that seat will be up in 2012. Mm-hmm. Mayor, what do you think? You want to make a little news here and tell us what your plans are?
The first thing I would
It'll just be between the few of us.
Just a little secret.
Yeah.
The first thing I tell you is I enjoy being mayor. I've enjoyed the experience. I think that we've made an awful lot of progress in Dallas. We talked about some of the achievements, be it public sector, some of the projects, those sorts of things. I think the best thing that we've accomplished in Dallas is a change of attitude. People feel things can get done. There's really that sense of optimism, that belief in tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I feel awfully good about that. So I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. I will also tell you, though, that there's issues on the national level that go into the economy, that things that we've talked about today that interest me, too. Next several months, I'll have to make a decision on running for re-election or not. And when that comes up, I'll address it the same way as I always have.
But you haven't foreclosed on the possibility of doing that. You're not closing the door to the possibility of running.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Are you looking at anything else besides running for the Senate, potentially?
The issues that would concern me would be...
More at the national level.
At the national level.
Right.
Those are the issues where I think we have to get back to competitiveness. We have to make sure that we've got a country that's going to be strong into the future. And I have, as you just indicated by this conversation, real concerns.
Okay. Mayor Leppert, I want to thank you very much for taking the time. Let's give him a hand. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Good to be with you, Senator Reagan.
We have the opportunity to have some questions from members of the audience, and I would encourage any of you who have questions for the mayor to please ask them. We're going to have you on camera, but we'll repeat the question if we can't hear you. We have a microphone that we're going to walk around. Ma'am.
Leaders in Dallas are always talking about revitalizing downtown, and I was just wondering how your revitalization efforts are different from the various other revitalization efforts.
Right. We haven't mentioned Laura Miller's name in this conversation, but let's talk about how, say, your approach to downtown is different from the approach that the previous mayor took, or even the mayor before that.
I think we've been very aggressive, and I think the success has followed that. If you look at downtown Dallas, and I'll tell you, it has been an effort over more than one administration, but we're seeing real success. We've got probably more investment and more things going on in the downtown area of Dallas than about any downtown I can think of in the nation. You kind of look around and you see a new performing arts center. The AT&T Performing Arts Center was opened a year ago. It is viewed not only as the largest, quantitatively you can measure that, but also I believe the finest anywhere in the nation now, in part because we've got new facilities, an opera house that was built in 2010, a new theater, all of those components, to be truthful with you, I'd put them up very favorably to a Kennedy or a Lincoln. Finest arts complex, I think, anywhere in the nation. We've got a park that's under construction. That park is not only going to be a great park like a Bryant Park in New York, but it's bridging, it's literally being built on top of a freeway, and it'll have an important part because it'll tie the uptown and the downtown together. You go two blocks down, there is under construction $150 million Perot Museum of Nature and Science. Be a phenomenal museum. Great for all of us to go and enjoy. Hopefully it inspires some kids to get involved in science and technology. You've got that. You have expansion in the hospitality industry, an important industry for Dallas as well as any other
market. Not just the hotel we alluded to, but others.
In fact, not just the hotel.
Yeah.
We've had, in the space of the last couple of years, over $300 million that's been invested by private firms. In a lot of cases, that's renovations of existing facilities to show the faith that they have in the industry in Dallas and the potential for the visitor industry in Dallas. But we've also had new boutique hotels that have come on over the last couple of years. We've had an increase in residents. 10 years ago, if you'd gone in Dallas, you would have probably found about 200 people living in Dallas. Just in the high-rise area, we're up to about 7,000-8,000. You draw the line a little bit wider, it's 50,000. So, as I say, it's fun now to go in downtown Dallas in the afternoon because you actually see people walking dogs and pushing baby strollers. It is much different than it used to be. It's one of the things that we continue to push. And we've been fortunate. We've had companies like AT&T, Comerica, Tenet that have moved down there. That's given a base. So when we talk about things that are happening in downtown, in Dallas in total, the revitalization of downtown is very, very high on the list.
Other questions for the mayor? A gentleman in the back and then the gentleman right there. Mr. Theobald.
Mayor Leppert, excuse me, thank you for coming down here.
It's good to be here.
I noticed that you donated your salary to education. I commend you for that, and I also encourage you to keep doing that if you can afford to do that. I go to Austin Community College. It's a public school, and I'm very happy with the opportunities that I get there. I know that you're an advocate of education, and you're also a Perry supporter. What do you think about the additional 10% cuts that Perry's asking for public education? And how do you see the role of the state in guaranteeing education for its citizens?
Well, as you said, I'm a big advocate of education. You mentioned you're going to a junior college. I went to a junior college for a year too, and had no idea what I was going to do. Unfortunately, I know that the reason I'm sitting in front of you is because I had a chance for a great education. So I am a terrific advocate of that. I think there's a lot of things that we can do, both K through 12 and on the higher learning side, and we can accomplish that. You need to balance it, and that's one of the challenges. In any type of thing, when you're on the public side or on the private side, it's a matter of balance. I will do everything I can to make sure that we've got a strong education system because I understand how important that is for communities and for our nation. At the same time, there's a balancing go. Now, in Dallas, I think what we've done effectively is said that there's priorities. We can't do everything. We've got to turn our back on some things that aren't core, that aren't fundamental to the success of the city. We understand some constituencies, and I've made some constituents mad on it, but some things you just can't do. I think part of the reason that we've been successful in Dallas is we set priorities, we've been faithful to those priorities. I think we need to do that at the state level, we need to do that at the federal level, and public institutions usually don't do it. So education would be very high on my list. I would push it hard. I would say, tell you that I think one of the great successes that we've had in Texas is the evolution of our higher learning system. And I tell you that one of the great advantages that we've got today is because California disinvested into their higher education system. So it would be a priority, but I'll also tell you I'd have to balance it. I'm not going to live within our means. We've got to find the available resources and make priorities. It's never easy, but it has to be done.
So you support, to the questioner's point, you support the idea of having to do a 10% cut?
No. I would be supportive of education as a priority. I would go in and make my own decisions if I was in that position. I'm not in that position.
So you would not do an across-the-board, just mandated cut?
I'm afraid I can't put myself in that position because I haven't gone through and looked at all
right.
the pieces. If you want to talk about Dallas, I'll be able to tell you to the nth degree where we're putting the pennies.
Okay, sir.
Yes, Mayor. I was in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago with a Richardson-based manufacturer at a trade show, and we told everyone that came by our booth that we're in Dallas, we're in Dallas, we're in Dallas, and actually that trade show will be in Dallas next year.
Good.
But when we came back to Richardson, I know the company needs to expand capacity, and I suggested, why not Dallas? And the immediate reaction is, Dallas isn't good for business. We're probably looking at Frisco, McKinney, and Plano. Now, I understand that you've said that our competition isn't the suburbs, it's Shanghai, all these other international cities, and you've done a great job as far as like corporate relocations for AT&T and Comerica. But what are we doing, at least whether it's on the policy level or perception level, to make Dallas that city where whether, you know, Ross Perot, Mark Cuban all made their fortune if all these folks are going northbound. I, being a native Dallasite, I don't want to have to go there or Houston or anywhere else. I'd like to think I can come back to Dallas and, you know, create my little empire. So I don't know, you know, what you can do as far as perception or just out there to let small businesses know, hey, we want you just as much as we want AT&T or Comerica.
So the empire builder is worried about Plano and Frisco. What do you do about that?
We want his empire in Dallas is the short answer. And we're trying to do several things. One is the perception side of it. 2 weeks ago, I was in Europe. And nearly all of that week was spent meeting with businesses and conveying to them how much Dallas wanted them and the advantages of being in Dallas. So that becomes one piece. In the space of the 3 years, we've been in China several times, been in probably 15, 20 cities in China, again, carrying that message on an international basis. We are very aggressively going out and marketing Dallas on a domestic basis. Everything from letters and phone calls to sending iPhones to people with all of the great attributes of doing business in Dallas. So
you're sending iPhones to people?
Yeah.
Explain.
Sure. We set up a program that we have an iPhone, and we go in and take out most of the content of it and set it up so that it's got, under contacts, it's got the personal cell phone numbers of the leading CEOs in Dallas. You hit a button and all of a sudden I come up, talk about the benefits of being in Dallas. There's another icon you hit, and it actually will show you the taxes that you'll pay in Dallas versus the taxes of the community that business is in, specific business. So we customize it, program. We send those out. Again, trying to get people to focus on the benefits of being in Dallas.
So this is essentially a gimmick is not, I mean it much more positively, but this is basically something you've developed as an economic development incentive.
It is exactly that. Yeah. It is a way to try to market Dallas and in when...
And this is cold calling, essentially? This is not people who are looking to relocate, but you're actually reaching out to people to try to poach them from other cities?
What we do is set up a filter. Yeah. I moved a company to Dallas, so I understand the issues. Yeah. So we basically did is looked at thousands and thousands of companies and developed a filter. People move usually, highest probability, when there's a change in management. So if there's been a recent change in management, if there's been a divestiture, if there's been an acquisition, and we try to measure the chaos level in the industry, all of those sorts of things. So we developed kind of a priority, and out of that, there were 400 companies, and we did that. So we are trying to market, to your point, Dallas very aggressively. We're also trying to make Dallas a much more business friendly. We're going through an exercise now of making the permitting and zoning process easier. It's not easy enough. There's still problems with that. So we're going through and pulling the private industry in and trying to make those sorts of things easier. I'll tell you, next week we've got a small manufacturer coming in. One of the sites that we're going to show them is in South Dallas. We're going to try to push that as hard and fast as we can. We do want you to build your empire in Dallas.
iPhones. You never know. Sir.
Hi. I've been reading a bit about how in a lot of cities around the country, counties, all sorts of governments, the pensions are in pretty big trouble and the pension systems are way underfunded. And it's a little bit tricky, I think, to figure out. But I was wondering where Dallas stands on that. You've talked a lot about living within Dallas's means. Yeah. And I was wondering how that looks.
Yeah, the pension issue has come up, actually, as you know, in the governor's race. Right. There's been criticism of the handling of the pension system in the city of Houston when Mayor White was there.
Yeah. Pensions are critical. If you look across the country, a lot of cities have gotten themselves in trouble with the pensions. You actually have some bankruptcies in California now, largely due to the pensions. What I've asked is two things. One is a review of the pension system, of where we are and where we stand today. Now, in terms of the financial piece, we're actually in Dallas in pretty good shape. Our percentage of funding is very high. We don't have big underfunded gaps and those sorts of things. So from a financial position, we're in good shape. I have asked the city manager to review where we are and all the components of it so that everybody can look at it. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars. I think that's an appropriate question that we should be asking. But I think when you look at Dallas and compare it to especially other cities across the nation, you'll feel very good about where we are.
Other questions? We have time for one or two more questions for the mayor. Any topic at all? I can always come back in and ask something if you all don't, as we have the time. Ma'am.
Can you talk a little bit about your ideas with transportation and the priorities for Dallas
You were mentioning kind of, we were talking earlier about some of the priorities and the challenges and those sorts of things. And transportation is clearly one. Both in Dallas and in Texas, we're dependent on continuing to grow an economy, and one of the soft spots on that is going to be transportation. We're trying to do a couple of different things. One really doesn't have to do with transportation, but it impacts it significantly, and it goes back to the question on the downtown. We want to see the downtown become much more vital, have much more concentration in that area. Clearly, the downtown, what we're trying to do in the Trinity River, can have enormous impacts. If we can get more concentration, e.g., get away from some of that sprawl, that'll make a big impact. Dallas is also, with surrounding communities, undergoing the largest construction project for light rail anywhere in the nation. That becomes a big piece of the investment in what we're trying to accomplish there. The reality of it is we're going to add 1 million people every 5 to 7 years. 1 million people every 5 to 7 years. So in the space of the next 20 years or so, we're going to be a metropolitan area of about 10 million. The transportation becomes critical. To your point that Texas has changed, 40 years ago it was largely a rural state. Today it is very much a metropolitan, arguably the most metropolitan state in the nation. We have to look at transportation much more in terms of kind of intra-regional areas than inter-regional areas. Yeah. So I think more and more the decision making is going to have to be on a local basis, and it's going to have to address that. There's not going to be enough money, so we have to do things that focus on lifestyle, concentrations, work patterns, lifestyle patterns, all those sorts of things. That's what we're trying to do in Dallas, is get much more concentration in downtown to reduce some of the transportation needs, but also make the investments of roads. Not everybody's going to get on light rail.
Well, to that point, and to the idea that the local community needs to own this issue, Senator Corona from Dallas was one of those at the legislature last time pushing for the opportunity for local jurisdictions to, you know, raise money to pay for more roads or to pay for better roads. What about that?
I'm a big fan of letting people at the lowest level make the decision.
So you would be for the so-called local option?
Yes, because in that sense, the people get to make the decision. Right. Government doesn't. It has to be the people making it. But the people are making decisions based on their community at that level.
So that's a case, where the anti-tax mayor of Dallas might be willing to entertain an initiative that the people could vote. If they want money put into roads, they'd be willing to pay a little bit more directed toward that, with the idea that there's an economic development component to that, as you say, if you're willing to invest in things.
Now, again, I would not be supportive of a tax increase. Right. But I would be supportive of the people being able to make the decisions at the local level. Because again, I think more and more the issues that we have in El Paso are different than Dallas. You've got to come back to the local level and have it be made at the local level.
One answer for everybody.
I think whenever you get, and I'll tell you from a business standpoint, the further you got away from the customer, the more likely it was a bad decision. So I am very much of the opinion of push it down to that lowest level. That's where the decision can be made most effectively. When you take decisions, it doesn't matter if it's the public or private sector, and you start elevating those and distance yourself from where the impact is, you make bad decisions.
Okay, let's take one last one for the mayor before we go. Mr. Lippincott, speaking of transportation.
Yeah, I don't care about transportation. I want to ask about something
next. You're going to ask about the baseball?
I'm sorry, I thought I was next.
Close.
Did I miss one over there? Oh, please forgive me. Mr. Lippincott, the guy with the mic is louder than you right now. So how about we end, Mr. Lippincott, we'll end with you.
We'll see.
Is that okay? Over here, sorry.
And it clearly has to be the Rangers question, right?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you're probably aware, there was a Dallas court case earlier this year where an elected judge allowed a homosexual couple to have a divorce and ruled unconstitutional our state constitutional amendment that defines marriage as one man and one woman. Then the Dallas Court of Appeals reversed that decision. Do you support our constitutional amendment at the state level that says marriage is between one man and one woman?
Well, that's not a question about baseball for sure. So let me do that serious
one. The answer is yes. To me, it's a faith question. I told you my faith is very important to me. I believe it's defined as one man and one woman.
It's also a short answer, too, actually.
Well,
Mr. Lippincott.
Let's talk sports. I mean, obviously, with the Rangers in the news, it makes me think about sports and the role of sports in the city. What's the future of the Cotton Bowl? The building, not the event.
There's an awful lot of effort to try to have good things happen there. We've got Texas OU through 2015. We'll have a bowl game, a secondary bowl game, but a bowl game on January 1st this year. There continues to be effort to get other games in there. We can be pretty competitive during the state fair of trying to bring games in. But the reality of it is it's an awful competitive environment. We're fortunate to have a great stadium in Arlington. The Cowboys Stadium clearly is being viewed as the, you know, best stadium anywhere in the world today. That's great.
It's not helping them this year.
Great stadium, though.
Yes.
Great stadium.
Okay, just clarifying.
So the Cotton Bowl, we're trying to do that. We're trying to add, potentially there's a museum that'll go into it and that sort of thing. We hope that as we evolve towards using Fair Park more than just the 3 or 4 weeks surrounding the state fair, that that'll be an advantage. But I'll be frank with you, it is a tough go. Trying to bring games in, especially when you get in to weather of the November, December, January timeframe, becomes a challenge. It is a great facility, clearly for Texas OU. We think that there's strong commitment for them to stay there, in large part because of that state fair. It turns it into an event, not just a game. So we're trying to market it every which way we can. So we're trying to be aggressive in that respect.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, well, again, let's give the Mayor of Dallas, Tom Leppert, a hand. Thank you for being here. All right, Mr. Mayor.
Good to meet you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this. Thank you all for coming.
Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, IBC Bank, NRG, Christus Health, and BP.